Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, we're good. Yeah.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Well, good morning, everyone. Happy New Year 2019. I hope it's a great year for everyone. This is MJ Network, and I am your host, Fran Lewis, and I am totally excited. We have the author of one of my new favorite books, the author of Authors here, Mark Cameron, and the powerful, well-researched, and thought-provoking, as once again, author Mark Cameron takes Jack Ryan and the Campus Team Plus his cabinet to higher levels. When decisions are made, lives hang in the balance, and opinions, voices are heard, and no thought is left discounted. And the Jack Ryan, although a fictional character created by the late Tom Clancy and brought to new heights by author Mark Cameron, we realize the importance of why the person in power running our government needs to respect his cabinet, look for answers and help wherever he can, and to honor the words that are spoken when taken, his oath of office. And that is the last paragraph of my review. I thought that would sound really a great way to introduce Mark Cameron. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Fran. Thanks for that review.
Yes, my review is on Amazon with 12 stars, seriously. And I always try to take the title and work it into the last sentence of my book. I said, this was not too hard to do. So I have it on my Facebook wall, yeah, that we are live, and I'm going to send you and Elena the link later. So tell us a little bit about this particular book in summary. And how you created Jack Ryan your way. I really like him too, by the way.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. When I found out I was going to be writing the Tom Clancy Jack Ryan books, it was pretty daunting because I've been a Clancy fan since the beginning, you know, since The Hunt for Red October, and I was a young police officer, and sort of that's the way I spent my downtime was reading. And So I was familiar with the characters, but taken off guard when I got the job because I didn't really know it was coming. It was a surprise to me. And Mark Graney, the previous Tom Clancy author, had recommended me. So it was a pleasant surprise and a scary surprise. But I knew that I wasn't going to be able to write like Tom Clancy. I think if I tried to mimic him, it would come off as counterfeit. And so but what I did want to do is make his characters true to what he, especially Jack Ryan, true to what he envisioned and how he described them. And so I worked really hard, you know, and not everybody's going to agree with this, but I worked really hard to try to keep Jack Ryan the same everyman kind of hero that, you know, is going to do the right thing no matter what. He's going to stumble. He's going to, you know, make a wrong choice periodically, but he won't make a bad choice. He's a good guy. So I try to stay, I didn't reinvent the character. I just try to stay very true to what Tom Clancy envisioned when he wrote the character, and then put Ryan in maybe some different spots and you know, and added some new intrigue and some new plot points, and hit some of the same characters that we've seen in many previous books, you know, Mary Pat Foley and the chief of staff and the secretary of state, and a lot of these same characters that Clancy created, and then some new ones that Mark Graney and Grant Blackwood have created in the meantime.
Well, I haven't read Mark Rainey. Is he still writing Tom Clancy? So I did try to get
the last one
that he did.
He writes his own.
I didn't think so.
He writes his own.
He writes his own
series now. He writes he writes a wonderful series called The Gray Man. He was writing the Tom Clancy's when I met him at a BoucherCon, a literary conference, writing conference.
Mm.
And he's become a good friend of mine over the years. And he actually decided to he wrote, I believe, 7 Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan books. And that's a lot.
I think I read one or two.
Of books while you're trying to write your own. Yeah, they're great. They're really, in fact, I probably have as many people grouchy at me because I'm not Mark Graney as they do that I'm not Tom Clancy. He has a very large following on these on his Tom Clancy books as well as his Gray Man. So anyway, he's a great writer and a good friend, but he decided to step away, and he's the one that to focus on his own books, and he's the one that recommended me. So because of he had read some of my Jericho Quinn novels. So anyway, he's come up with some great characters as well, and I just try to keep the Jack Ryan universe going as it was established and as it was, as it morphed later on in the subsequent books after Mr. Clancy's death.
I know that was sad. That was sad.
Very.
I love Tom Clancy, and what's really funny is because I hadn't asked of this book. I did ask for. I have to admit I did, but the other ones I didn't, and they just sent me Power Empire, and I said, this is really good. And the other Tom Clancy books just sort of came at me, and I go like, oh, I didn't know I was getting that. So I was really glad. But Mark Rainey, he didn't send me anything. As a matter of fact, the other day, I was on the internet, and I'm going like, The Reckless, David Putnam, The Reckless, and I said to him, just for fun, on Facebook, I read your book, now I reviewed it, would you like to come on my show? Never figuring he would say on Facebook, yeah, I'll take you up on it. It was hilarious. Well, he grew up with a friend of
That's
mine.
Funny.
So I'm like, he said, I'm afraid of Terry, so I better do what you said. I go like, okay, I did this again. So the book starts off with the Persian Spring protest. Tell us about that. And why you brought that in, these particular protests, and what caused them?
Yeah, so the way these books come about is I have a very close working relationship with, of course, with the editor, Tom Colgan, of this series, and we chat about different plots and things like that. In our first meeting after Power and Empire came out, when we agreed to do another book together, then we chatted, and the idea of a so-called Persian Spring came about in that first meeting, and we just kind of batted some ideas back and forth over breakfast, and I can't even remember where we were, in New Orleans maybe, I can't remember, at another writer's conference, and the Persian Spring idea was fascinating because of, events with the Arab Spring and I hate to say uprising, but protests for more freedom and things like that in the Middle East. And so anytime a book is all about what ifs and questions. And so the what if would be in this one, if that same sort of thing happened in the real universe in fairly recent history, there's been the Green Movement and protests in Iran, and so we played the what if game and sort of came up with the idea that what if there was a movement in Iran to that was not what it seemed, and everybody, most people in the Western world would welcome a freer, and then I believe most people in Iran would welcome a freer Iran, or at least many people, and so. I just thought, what if most people, and even in the cabinet and the Western world, said, "Yeah, this is great stuff," but Ryan, sort of, in opposition to some of his cabinet members says, this is not what it seems to be. There's something more going on here. And Jack Ryan's often the smartest person in the room. He just doesn't gloat about it. And so the book is basically, that's one of the main subplots in the book, is that this he's being pushed one direction by his cabinet, by public will, by really by everything around him. And Ryan has to say, wait, let's hang on a minute. Let's take this slow, even though it would seem like something that should be welcomed. So that was a fun what if to play.
That was interesting. But what I like about him, as opposed to people today that are real, that he doesn't fly off the handle, that he doesn't lose his cool, and that he acts like a president. And
yeah, sure. You know, I think there's always going to be there are always going to be comparisons, but when I write, you know, when I write Jack Ryan or when I write any of my own characters or characters in the Tom Clancy franchise that I've, you know, made up, you know, invented to mix in with the original characters, I try very hard not to compare them to. For instance, you'll see the president of Russia, for instance, his name is Yermolov in this book. I'm not writing a shadowed version of Putin. I'm writing about a different. This is a world that's parallel to ours, but I really want to write a different story in a different universe. You know, in Tom Clancy's. Mm-hmm. universe, for instance, in the books that he wrote while he was alive, he had a shooting war with Japan, where we went to war with Japan. And very few authors today could put us in a realistic book where we were in a war with a country that's our ally. And so he was able to brilliantly, I believe, skew reality just enough that it seemed hyper realistic, you know, very realistic, you know, cutting edge, and because it was, but at the same time, it wasn't. It was, you know, a little bit different historically, and so I want to do that with President Ryan. Is not a because he is level headed. It's not an indictment against past presidents or present presidents. He's Jack Ryan, and the world he lives in, he's on his own, not a comparison.
No, he's really interesting. So we have another problem in the book, which is an epidemic everywhere, even now, and that's the flu epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting because I actually looked up what a bot video was. I wanted to understand it, and I do now, and that's scary. And I'm sure that people do that now, too, when people don't realize that they're fake. So how did you create the flu epidemic? And he came off looking horrible, but he wasn't him, supposedly.
Yeah, well, you know, part of my previous job was talking to the media and interview, you know, being interviewed and things like that. And it's always – it's been, at least over the course of my career – worrisome that something that we say might be taken out of context. And for instance, when I was a chief deputy in the Marshal Service, I felt, you know, I was often in front of the cameras after a particular high profile arrest or shooting or something where the media, you know, news media would want to be involved. And I really, 30 years, I didn't come across, that I can remember anyway, offhand, anybody in the media that was, you know, out to get me or out to spin what I said a certain way, but they were, you know, in a bad way, but they only had, there was a finite amount of time, and oftentimes things would be, you know, snippets would be quoted out of context and seem a different way than I intended them. And so, with these deep fake videos and things that come to play in the book. And incidentally, this book was written you know, a year ago, and just in the last, in fact, I think the newest Foreign Affairs magazine has a big article, and Wired, and both have big articles about deepfake and fake, you know, artificial intelligence kind of videos that can mimic people so well. And a lot of those are free. Like, you can download the software. It's quirky and jumpy more than the more expensive software, but it's become even more cutting edge since I sent the manuscript in. This is I was very lucky, fortunate, whatever, to hit on something that's, you know, just about the right time. That this scenario in the book with those sorts of deepfake videos, it's in the news right now. It's kind of a very interesting thing to me, because different, you know, much more frightening, I think, than a journalist mm-hmm. that either cuts your soundbite short or misquotes you accidentally. But in the book, a sinister group, or groups, really. I mean, the people ask me sometimes, well, what, do you ever find out who's doing it? And, you know, you look around, and mm-hmm. a large percentage in real life, I'm not talking about the book now, or I guess I'm saying in real life and the book, in real life, yeah. many of the reviews and tweets and social media posts are mm-hmm. made by foreign actors that have some, or just people that want to troll. And so it's not just a bad actor out there. It's just it's several that just want to get us to fight each other. And there's an interesting premise, and I don't bring it about in this book. I talk about it in several other mm-hmm. books. But the premise, there's a Chinese saying, and I quote usually half of it, but the saying is, when two tigers fight, one is injured mm-hmm. beyond repair, and the other one is dead. And you can talk. I quote that a lot when I'm talking to young mm-hmm. people about fighting and how there's really not a winner. One's injured beyond repair and one is dead. But if you read the entire quote or the entire sentiment, it doesn't end there. It's basically, if you're trying to take a tiger, wait and let them kill each other. If you're the hunter trying to take care of a tiger, they're going to fight. One of them's going to be so injured that you can go up and get him easy, and the other one's going to be dead. And I think that with these bots and trolls and deepfake videos and things like that, the idea is not to overwhelm from without. It's to get us to overwhelm each other from within. And that's what really the premise of the book is about.
Well, I know how it feels to have trolls. That's why I don't have a chat room. That's why I do it on my Facebook wall. I was interviewing mm-hmm. someone very, very, very popular, and the people didn't like the topic. It was the Ivory Coast and elephants and why we should mm-hmm. not take the tusks and stuff. And they were saying all sorts of stupid things. And I said, this show is being taped and recorded, which it is, and monitored for quality assurance by Blog Talk Radio. I would suggest that if you don't like my topic, that you disconnect. And they did. And what I didn't know was that I could have reported them to Blog Talk Radio, and they said that they would knock them off, but I figured they would get another account. So I make the show private and put it on afterwards, because I can't deal with people that are ignorant. I don't have time for that. And, yeah.
I don't know what you mean.
So we have the floods, and they're affecting people, and we have a crooked senator, and what does this person want to go after Ryan? And the floods are another thing that is affecting everything too.
Yeah, and I think that's a reflection of what mm-hmm. any real leader, or particularly a governor, or in this case President Ryan, you know, a leader of mm-hmm. large swaths of, you know, just geography and large populations. I wanted to make sure that people understood that it wasn't as if he had a threat you know, a threat that he had to deal with and could devote all his time and energy, especially when that threat was, you know, ostensibly to his own reputation. So does he worry too much about his own reputation, or does he think about the crux of it? Is what he really worried about is the diseases caused by flooding? Is he worried about the flu epidemic? Is he worried about what's going on in other parts of the world? Or is he worried more about, you know, that he looks bad? And I think I often, when I was talking back and forth to Tom Colgan, the editor, I let him know that what I envisioned for this book was President Ryan spinning a lot of plates at the same time and trying to keep them going and really going too much. He's got too much on his plate, but that's what makes Ryan so heroic, is that he rises to the occasion.
You know what gets me is that my review said, I actually read the book, seriously, and I've read reviews after I posted mine, and I'm finding that people are not really, they're reading, but they're not getting it, and they're just writing, picking like the back cover or a short synopsis, and they're not getting it. They're not getting exactly what you were trying to say. And what you were trying to do.
Well, and maybe that's my fault. I should say that I'm pleased that you wrote the review, but I don't read my reviews. At least not social media or on. I have it for years. I don't think anything good comes of it, and it either makes me, if I get 50 five-star reviews, because I did in the beginning, read. The reviews on my Jericho, and I would read, you know, the Jericho Quinn series, and I'd get a ton of five-star reviews, and then I'd not believe them because, you know, I don't like to get big-headed, but I get one, and it just makes me sad. And writing is such a emotional thing anyway, that I think oftentimes reviewers don't realize they're saying bad stuff about art. I mean, they realize that, but they don't realize that they're really reviewing the author, and it doesn't, you know, I mean, it's like saying, I hate this book because the cover's red and I like green.
Yeah, that's it. I know.
Okay. You know, that's fine. But I do, and I'm not discounting people's opinion, because some people don't like a spy book, or some people don't like it where, you know, Russia is the, or I shouldn't even say Russia, forces within Russia are the enemy, or, you know, or Iran, the clerics in Iran, Iran are bad. And in a certain portion of the book, people are going to be upset about that. So I think any book that is quote unquote good, at least in my opinion, the books that I like are a little bit controversial. They make you think.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be people that don't like them. So I don't really, as long as my editor likes it, as long as my wife likes the book, then
as long as I like it. I want you to know, when I posted your review on Amazon, but with 9 stars, 10 stars, whatever. I just looked. You got 50% 5 stars and 26 4 stars. That's pretty good. The rest don't count. And I'm saying, like,
yeah, well,
I posted it on my Just Reviews, and in 5 seconds, people read it. I mean, I posted something this morning, Free Fall, that's coming out Tuesday. I said, let me see what happens, just for kicks, if I posted 2 days early. 10 people read it and said they liked it. I go, like, wait a minute, I only posted it 1 minute ago. Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, I'm very happy. I don't mean to discount reviewers. I am very happy when people
it's
review
hard,
the book.
I know.
And I think it gets
I don't
people
mean my
out
own
there.
Reviews.
I just don't. Well, I don't think it's productive for an author to read their own reviews. You know, I read Publishers Weekly. I read Kirkus, but the reader reviews, because they're anonymous and so out there. You know, it could be a bot, it could be whatever, and I would rather be writing. And, you know, and frankly, by the time the book comes out, I'm a book and a half down the road. I don't want to You know, I love to talk about the books. I love to do publicity on the books as far as chatting about them with folks like you. But, you know, I have another book coming out of my own in the end of February, and I'm working on.
Oh, nice.
You know, so we're gearing up for publicity for that, and I'm working on, and I will, and I'm working on another one. So going back and sort of, even if they were all great reviews, I feel like Scrooge McDuck kind of frolicking around in my gold, you know. I really have other things to think about. And I'm very happy when people write reviews because that drives Amazon algorithms and all that stuff. So,
yeah, but I've,
you know, review.
I've been accused of really getting it. I go like, what did I get? And I go, yeah, okay. It's probably my background as a reading specialist, and reading 10 books a day and for reading masses and learning. I had a professor in college that made me read, and I just bought the book just so I could refresh my brain, Understanding Reading by Frank Smith, and it teaches you how to look deep into the book so that you understand what you're reading. So my other favorite characters are, before we the campus. Tell us how the campus comes into this, and Jack Ryan Jr., who I absolutely love. I love Jack Ryan.
No, good, yeah. Yeah, so the campus is a Tom Clancy notion. You know, he created the campus, this off-the-books intelligence agency, which is, it's really a private organization that works off the books as a they don't work for Jack Ryan, but they certainly, you know, President Jack Ryan, but they are definitely a quasi intelligence agency for the United States. So we get to meet a lot of familiar characters from Tom Clancy books when he was alive, like John Clark, who's my second only to Jack Ryan. He's my favorite character. Domingo Chavez, and then some new characters that have been built up along the way, like Adar Sherman and Midas and you know, Gavin Beery and people like that are all part of this more Mission Impossible-esque kind of a crew that go out. And because, you know, let's face it, in a lot of the intrigue in a Tom Clancy book happens because of political will and, you know, chess match, you know, brinksmanship and chess matches and statesmanship and espionage with, you know, in the past with like Mary Pat Foley, who's the director of national intelligence in the newer books, was an analyst and case officer, or actually a case officer for the CIA when Ryan was an analyst. And she's now the director of national intelligence. But in the past, in Cardinal of the Kremlin, for instance, she was an on-the-ground case officer in Moscow, you know, working Cardinal, who's a spy in place in the Soviet Union back in that time. So there needs to be somebody, because Jack Ryan Sr. is the president. He's not going to go out and do these, you know, covert missions anymore, even, you know, how he would be dumped into things as an analyst. So there needed to be somebody to be out, you know, ground pounder, so to speak, being out there doing the surveillance, doing the dirty work, the pipe hitter kind of stuff. And that's the campus. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a suspension of disbelief that has to go on with the son of a sitting president of the United States, you know, jet setting around the world. And I try to address some of that, but some of it we have to suspend disbelief and watch the, you know, and have a good time. Just go along and enjoy the adventure and romance of the book. And I enjoy writing the campus characters. I enjoy there's a character that you and I talked about a little bit before the show started, the Eric Doshenko character, a half Azeri, half Russian intelligence officer, and the interplay that he's one of my favorite characters in the book, and the interplay between him and Jack Ryan Jr. and the other characters to me was mm-hmm. great fun to write, and I get a lot of emails. I told you I don't read my reviews, but I do read and answer every email that I get from readers, and I get even the grouchy ones, and I do I get a lot of emails that say they really like Doshenko, and
me too.
And you know, and you,
I was
so,
hoping to bring him
it's
back.
It's kind of fun. Yeah,
considering the ending of the book, I'm not going to say how it ended. I just feel that, you know, he could be very useful to everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But
exactly.
I said, gee, you know, they got to bring this guy back because I like him. And so there were so many plots, and then the campus was working on something else that was equally as serious, besides the floods in Iran and everything else. So what exactly was their role? And poor Jack Ryan Jr., it's a good thing he thinks fast, otherwise he'd be in big trouble.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, a lot of that, I think that's what makes for a thriller that I like to read anyway. Really, any book I like to read is watching the character come up against seemingly insurmountable odds and, you know, really strong antagonistic characters somehow become victorious, even at physical or emotional, you know, toll to them. But so what I hope is a typical Clancy fashion, the plots converge. So the plots that are going on with President Ryan and the different points of the campus and the quote unquote bad guys, if you will, are all sort of careening towards one final showdown, or maybe two final showdowns, and the campus is involved in following some arms dealers around the world and kind of seeing what they're up to, and it as it happens, what they're up to involves directly with some of the things that President Ryan is dealing with. And the book begins with the theft of some missiles from Russia.
Yeah, that was
that
was interesting.
Yeah, so that one of the things that I always enjoyed about Clancy books is that he could get in the mind of other people besides the quote unquote protagonists of the book. You know, like for instance, in the Hunt for Red October, Marco Ramius, the sub captain, he's definitely a good guy in the book, but we learn that slowly, and we see, you know, what he's up to with the sub, and you know, this Russian, we get some Russian mentality, and I enjoy that. I think it's dangerous to us as human beings to become so so focused inward on our own culture that we forget everything going on around us, and I think it's very beneficial to travel and you know, really be hold on to the good things about our own culture and embrace the good things about other cultures. And so writing about Iran and Russia and Ukraine and China and Japan and things that Clancy did and things that I've tried to do in these books and my own books, that's been a real growth experience for me to be able to travel and chat with people and then be able to reflect back some of the things that I've learned through the eyes of these characters. And for instance, in the book before this, much of the action happens in Power and Empire, happens in Argentina, and my wife and I spent several weeks down there just looking at some of the issues that Argentina has and some of the beauty and problems, and I was able to have those things be seen in the, you know, through the eyes of Chinese folks down there, and also with Jack Ryan Jr. And the same thing with this one. I have not traveled to Iran, but I've talked to Iranian people and, you know, folks in the intelligence community that were case officers in Iran as far back as before the embassy takeover. Some older folks that just incredible resources and experts about that. And they really love the Iranian people. It's not the people. That's the one of the things that I really like about Jack Ryan is a character, and the idea that Tom Clancy came up with that he called the Ryan Doctrine, which was basically if Russia, and I'm using this as an example, but if Russia goes to war with the United States, Ryan was willing to, you know, commit what resources he needed to and fight. But more than that, the Ryan Doctrine says there is a person behind this war, and I'm going after him. In other words, leaders are the ones that are at fault, and that's who I'm going after, which is kind of a refreshing thing if you've been a pawn in your life and, you know, on the front line and you're thinking, why is this man or woman getting me in trouble when they're sitting behind a desk? And I think Ryan understands that, and especially with his own son and good friends out on the front lines, I think he understands that, okay, well, you, Mr. President of whatever country, if you're going to pick a fight with me, understand, you know, and my people, understand that my fight is with you, not your citizens. And I'm willing to, you know, my guys are going to crush your guys if they have to, but I'm coming after you. And that's kind of I don't know, that's just a neat sentiment to me for a leader. And so I try to play that up in the books, that Ryan Doctrine. And I think the campus gives him an opportunity to do that and to feel. Somebody asked me not too long ago if Jack Ryan Jr. ever told his dad, you know, President Ryan, about all the dangerous stuff he was doing. And I thought, oh my goodness, I hope not. Because I have sons that are in law enforcement. My daughter is 29 years old. I don't want to know about all the dangerous and stuff they're doing. I know that my youngest son, for instance, is working midnight shift on patrol right now, and he won't get off for another hour. And he'll probably call me on the way home and let me know he's okay. But I know, and he'll tell me more than he'll tell his mom. I hope he, you know, maybe leaves out some of the really rough stuff for his wife and his mother. But, and I think Jack Ryan Jr. is smart enough to be the same way. He's going to not necessarily tell his dad, oh, guess what, Dad, I almost got killed yesterday. The reader gets to know far more than Ryan, you know, President Ryan does. But that said, Jack Ryan is smart enough guy to know that his son's in the same kind of danger that, you know, our sons are out there and daughters on the front lines. And he's real sensitive to that, which I think makes for a compelling character.
No, I agree with you. I have a nephew that was in Afghanistan 3 times and he went back again. I'm not sure if he's going back again. I hope not. But and everybody worries until he shows his face back in America again. And I have a cousin that's a police officer. He actually picked a tough area in the island. He had a choice of anywhere, and he picked the toughest area. I don't know why to work with it. But I guess I grew up in the South Bronx, so to me, I'm used to it. you gotta be tough. What can I say? Yeah. Mary, we have about 20 minutes. Mary Foley is another one of my favorite characters. And Kathy Ryan, I like her too.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they
Me
both
too.
Sort of keep him, Mary keeps him on task. She doesn't tolerate anything. And how does Kathy keep the fires lit, you might say?
Well, I think that's a those are really good questions. And I think Jack Ryan's wife, Kathy, is she plays a varying, you know, degrees of importance in past books and some of All Fears. There's a lot more talk about their marriage, and you know, they go through some rocky times because of I mean, that's an old book, so I won't be spoiling it for anybody, but hopefully, but at least people that are listening to this have probably read all the Clancys, but there's some suspicion that Jack Ryan, who's still, you know, with the agency, there's some suspicion that he's having an affair and he's drinking too much and he's sort of having a little existential crisis with things that are going on. And it comes out that he's dealing with some trauma, but he's really the things he's doing are laudable and heroic. And his friends, Dean Chavez and Clark, kind of step in and help him out. And so Kathy plays a part in that while that's all unfolding. Mm. You see that he's really not having an affair. He's helping the wife of a friend, you know, from a former mission and things like that. So she plays a part in, you know, in Patriot Games, for instance. She's wounded by the terrorists from Ireland. And, you know, so you get to see her unfold, you know, her character unfold a little bit. She's not played a huge role, particularly in the, you know, in the intelligence, you know, espionage side of things. But from my own marriage, I can see that, you know, it's for somebody to do what Ryan does and be what Ryan is, he's going to have a close friend, you know, a bestie, so to speak. And I wanted to point out that Kathy Ryan is that person. He's got, because the presidents and any leader is going to make tough decisions and hard decisions that don't necessarily get to talk about with their spouse. And, but they do talk about a lot of things. And, you know, if you look at history, I enjoy reading about past presidents and how they dealt with their, personal relationships versus, you know, need to know things and what you protect your spouse from versus, you know, and what you tell them, what kind of counsel you seek from them. And I think I wanted to point out that, I mean, Kathy's not a hanger on kind of a first lady. She's attractive. She's fit. But she's smart. She's Dr. Ryan. She's a world-renowned ophthalmologist. I think I should say here that I really enjoyed the Amazon series with Krasinski as Jack Ryan, but it's a little different, the characters. So people that haven't read the Clancy novels that just get introduced to it from the book are going to think, oh, well, Kathy Ryan is a epidemiologist. She studies epidemics and, you know, diseases and like Ebola and things like that. Well, that's all well and good. That happens often in Hollywood. But when they go back to read the books, they might say, wow, this is wrong. She's not an eye doctor, but she is. She's an ophthalmologist, but not just an ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. She's a world-renowned surgeon. And so I think it's important to show that somebody as smart as Jack Ryan is going to have somebody he can talk to. Somebody, you know, he's not going to he's going to have somebody strong like Kathy. So she doesn't necessarily, maybe in the future, who knows, but she doesn't necessarily have a part in, you know, the espionage side of things, but she does advise. She does give him you know, sort of cajole and nudge and keep him on track, as I think any husband or wife would do respectfully to each other, to say, you know, have you thought about this, though? Have you thought about it's somebody with whom Ryan can let his hair down, so to speak, and talk about what he's scared of, you know, that sort of thing. So I wanted to bring that up, make him a well-rounded person.
Well, he is, but before I forget, Tuesday, we're going to do something different. Pastor Michael Jones is going to be talking about Begin to Serve. Pastor Michael Jones is a friend of my family, and Michael is going to talk about how he helps people all over the world. He goes to Dubai, he goes to Afghanistan, he goes to India. He helps them get water, food, clothes. He does clothing fairs in Florida, and he's amazing, so he's coming on. And next, very interesting topic, next Thursday, Vincent Zandri, who we all know and love. We're not talking about a book. We're talking about the publishing industry and how it's changed over the last 10 years or more. We're going to talk about the difference between independent publishing, indie publishing, traditional publishing, and self-publishing, royalties, and everything that deals with writer's block and how you get that novel out and how you get people to read it. And anything else that he decides he wants me to talk about. On the 16th, Cindy McDonald will be coming back again because we had technical difficulties last time. On the 17th, this should be interesting. I have no idea what we're talking about, but FBI agent Michael Tabman wants to talk about whatever's current in the news, and he'll let me know that day. I'm hoping that we could talk about the wall, and seriously, I'm hoping that we could talk about immigration. And I'm hoping that we could talk about the rising cost of healthcare. It's really difficult for a lot of people. So that's just some of what's happening in January. And I'm excited that on February 13th, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child will be here with Verses for the Dead. And I'm waiting for confirmation from David Putnam for The Reckless and a few other people. So I'm excited and really honored. The other character before we end is Yazabel. Are you bringing her back again, and how is she relating to Jack? I like her. She's tough.
Yeah, you know, I like her too. I think it's fun to explore. Characters don't just, unless they're killed off, they continue on with their lives. And Isabel is, from Jack's past, and she shows up again, and she's Iranian, and I actually think I could be wrong about this, but I think Grant Blackwood, a previous Clancy author, actually came up with the Isabel Kashani character, and then she was in a couple of Mark Graney's books as well. But they sort of went their separate ways, and it wasn't necessarily amicable. And in this book, she comes back as part of the plot that adds a lot of angst to Jack, because he was in love with her and it didn't end well. And so he's a little more introspective. In some past books, he's been a little more of a playboy. In this one, he kind of considers himself a bit of a warrior monk, so to speak. He's trying to figure out what's going on with his life, because none of this happens, espionage and excitement and adventure and all of that, and war and conflict don't happen in a vacuum. We're human beings that are involved in all that. And so Isabel, again, a very smart human being, able to be an interesting person to deal with for Ryan and others to deal with. So I think bringing her back for this book was a lot of fun for me, because I think she was an interesting character, would eventually, reappear in Jack Ryan Jr.'s life. And this is where I chose to bring her back in. So I enjoy that. I write a lot. My books don't necessarily, the main plot ends, no matter what book I write, the main plot will get tied up, but there's always a bit of a cliffhanger, because I think life is a cliffhanger, and you want to set the next book up, whether you write that book or not. You want to set the next story up in line with the ending of a particular book. Nothing really gets tied up in a neat bow. I think I have my kids raised, but they're not, they're just, they're going on with their own adventures. And I think I retired, investigated some crime years ago, and it reappears with somebody having questions about it, 30 years past. And so really life just sort of keeps going on. And that's what I want to show in these books or in any book that I write. People will say, oh, you wrote a cliffhanger because you wanted me to read the next book. Well, sure I do. I want people to read the next book, but I write cliffhangers because that's real life. That's interesting to me. The next question, what's the next question? You know, what's next? And that's what I want when people, I want people to get a certain sense of satisfaction when they get to the end of a book. Oh, wow, that's cool to see Isabel come back and her interactions with, you know, a former lover and best friend and confidant and, you know, co-adventurer. But what's next? Okay, this plot's done, but what's going to happen next? What's going to happen with Jack Ryan next? What's going to happen with Doshenko? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen with Isabel? What's going to happen with the people that live in the story? And what's going to be the aftermath of the people that don't make it out? So that's what I want people to think when they get to the end of a book. I'm glad that worked out.
What's next? That was the question that I was going to ask in a minute or two. So the starts off with the nuclear missiles are missing. And I felt so bad for that poor guy, Chernikov. I felt like he got blindsided. The guy got blindsided. I'm going like, wait a minute. These people are coming on the plane. Something's not right here. It's too pat. And I knew right away something was going to happen. And I'm going like, I felt so bad. And
well, I think
vodka.
I'm glad you felt that way. That was the intent. I write without music playing generally in the back. I write with it quiet, but in my head I hear music. I hear, you know, sinister music when I'm writing the sinister places. And I think for what I like, if the tension, that music that we hear when we watch a movie, you know, the Jaws kind of build up tension, the tense prose makes you hear that just subconsciously, and that's what I was going for with that opening scene. That, you know, it's kind of it's a tragic scene, and it's a build up for the whole, you know, the rest of the book. And so I want people to go, you know, figuratively speaking, oh my gosh, why is he walking into this danger? He's a smarter guy than that. Why is he allowing this to happen? Why we see it? And I think that's, you know, any kind of, as readers, we're really voyeurs. We're looking into other people's lives, into their hearts, into their minds, and watching these comedies or tragedies unfold. And in the beginning of this book, he's we can see early on that this colonel, this Russian colonel, is a tragic figure. What's going to happen to him? And you know, and I feel like, if I've done my right as an author, we'll worry about him almost as much as we worry, or even more than we worry about these two missiles that have the capability of killing tens of thousands of people.
I know.
Oh, but you know, where these missiles are being hijacked, but what about poor Colonel, you know? So I enjoy that. I enjoy the getting to know the characters, and even the tragic ones and even the bad ones, you know, and watching their lives unfold.
So before we end, what's next for my favorite guys, and what's next for you, and where can everyone learn about you and your work?
Yeah. So I'm at markcameronbooks.com, just MarcCameron books. Just Google Mark Cameron Books or Mark Cameron Author, you'd find me. But and I'm on Facebook at Mark Cameron Author, and I enjoy chatting with folks. But I am I write two other series. I write a series, sort of an over the top adventure series about a character named Jericho Quinn, and I already have a book done in that, and that comes out later next year. But prior to that, I have a book in a new series about a deputy marshal based in Alaska, and that character's name is Arliss Cutter. And he's the first book is called Open Carry, and just got a really nice cover quote from CJ Box, who's one of my favorite authors. And that takes a little bit of a different different spin. It's not a military thriller. It's an adventure thriller. Think C.J. Box or Craig Johnson or that kind of law enforcement rural sort of thing, except set in Alaska instead of Wyoming. But so that book, Open Carry, is coming out in the end of February. So right now I'm actually working on the second book in that series, finishing it up in the next couple of weeks, and then I'll go back to work on my third, Tom Clancy. The title hasn't been released yet, but that one's going to be, we already have the plot basically sketched out, and I've, talked plot with the editor, and he seems to like it. So I will, my wife and I actually head to one of our favorite places down in the South Pacific, the Cook Islands, a little island called Rarotonga, and we'll be down there for a few months, and I'll hole up and be working on my third Tom Clancy. So
that is great. Well, I have to tell you that
your
book is in my hand, and my dermatologist said I have to bring it over this afternoon. I just bought him 6 books. And when he heard last week, 2 weeks ago, that I was interviewing you, he said, "Do not give that to anyone else. Just bring it." Everywhere I go, I mean, no matter what, there are people in this building that say, "Do you have a bag for me?" The porter, everyone takes my books. But when Dr. Mermelstein heard that I was interviewing Mark Cameron, Tom Clancy, he says, "Wait a minute, I get that." I go, excuse me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just like unbelievable. Unbelievable. And my cousin wants it. I go, "You're going to have to buy this one because he comes first. What can I tell you?" But I wanted to thank you so much. I just sent an email to Elena to send me the one that's coming out in February. Are you working with her for the next one? Because she's really good.
No, actually, Kensington does my other books. I'll put you in touch with the person for Kensington for Open Carry.
Okay.
So
okay, good.
Elena handles the Clancy titles for Putnam.
She handles a lot of titles because I bother her a lot. And I'm I'm getting a few other people that I've never read before. I'm getting Ian Rankin too, and it's like, oh my God, I'm so excited.
I want to
thank you so much. I didn't realize. I said I knew you were 4 hours behind, but I didn't realize who you were. I was going, "Oh my God, it's beautiful there." And is it daytime now,
great,
or is it nighttime? Is it? It's daytime. You see the sun outside today?
Well, it's daytime, but we don't see the sun. The sun won't come up
it's
for
dark.
A couple of hours, but it's 8, almost 9 in the morning. So the sun will be up probably by 10:30 ish, something like
here.
That.
It's 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
here.
It's 9. It's 9 here.
And then, well, it's going to snow here on Tuesday. They said. I hope they're wrong. I really hope they're wrong. It's been crazy. Like yesterday, it was 60 degrees, and today it's 40, and tomorrow it's going to be 30. And I don't like to wear a jacket. So if it's 50 degrees, I walk out without a jacket. My husband looks at me and says, "Like, what are you doing?" "No, it's warm out here. Don't worry about it." But I want to thank you so much.
Right.
And if the person from Kensington wants to set up an interview for the next book, let me know. And only because it's you,
right,
I'll do it at 12 o'clock. Thank you so much, everyone.
Well, I'll be in Rarotonga. Thanks. Appreciate it, Fran.
Thank you so much, Mark, and have a nice trip, and have a great day, everybody,
All right.
And bye.
Bye-bye.